Are you ready for a whole new way of being in the world? Welcome to Living from the Inside Out with Michael Neal.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you may be. Our topic for today is, so you want to be a writer? And the numbers to call to get coaching on writing would be probably appropriate for today. 866-254-1579, toll free in the United States and Canada. 866-254-1579. Outside the United States and Canada, you can reach the show by dialing 001-760-918-4300. And obviously, we are going to be talking today about writing. And I can talk about this in the abstract for the entire show, and I'm happy to do that if you want me to. But I think you'll probably get the most out of it if you're actually interested in writing, if you phone in and we can talk about your writing. But I do want to set the table by talking about some of the sort of generically useful things that I have learned in not just a lifetime of writing, but probably about 32 years of working with writers, of editing books, of developmentally editing books, which is where you both are contributing as you edit and shape somebody else's work, and of course writing a number of my own books. And I think probably the first thing that I would distinguish is, do you want to write or do you want to be a writer? And how are those two things different? Well, we have an idea of what it means to be a writer. My friend Steve Chandler, I've been actually kind of snowblind. I'm editing a new video program that we'll be releasing at some point. I cannot tell you when it will be ready, but at some point we're going to be releasing a video program that Steve and I filmed called Falling in Love with Writing. Because for both of us, when we looked at Steve's, if you don't know Steve's work, he's written over 30 books in the sort of self-help, motivational field and forays into fiction. And he used to write country music songs and has a long career both as a writer and coaching writers, and similar to me in terms of ghosting and editing as well earlier in his career, and working with newspapers and creative agencies. And he said for him, when his first book came out, I don't think he actually got a dressing gown, but he sort of started walking around the house like, you know, the writer is going to have his breakfast now. What does a writer have for breakfast? The writer is having his black coffee and grapefruit and toast. And finally, his wife told him he needed to stop it, and he did. But some people I meet talk about they really want to be a writer. And when I ask them what they write, well, I haven't written anything yet. Now, that, if you haven't written anything yet, that's okay. That doesn't mean you can't write. But it might mean that you've got some identity thinking about what it means to be a writer as opposed to writing. See, if you fall in love with writing, you're going to wind up being a writer. Right? Because to a certain extent, the definition of a writer is somebody who writes. So the first question that I would have for you is, do you write? And by write, there are a lot of different ways of writing. So some people sit down and write longhand in a journal and then transcribe. Some people still write on typewriters. Yes, folks, they do. Some people, you know, write on their computers. Some people dictate and then have what they've dictated transcribed. Or literally in real time. There are still some well-known writers. The kind of two of the most famous who did their writing that way were Robert Ludlum, who wrote the Bourne books, like the Bourne Identity and all those thrillers. He never actually wrote them down. He dictated them, and they were typed up and then edited. Winston Churchill wrote dozens of books from his bathtub. You know, his poor secretarial staff would have to sit, and he would be in the bath with his cigar dictating, and they would type it up, and then he'd review the pages and make notes, and that would be what would become his books, both before and after he was prime minister. So it's not that you have to necessarily physically do it in a certain way, but are ideas coming out of your head and into words? Like, that would be probably my definition of what it is to be a writer. Not, oh, I have this romantic life where I live in a garret in France and in a farmhouse and I take months off, but then at the end this beautiful work emerges, or whatever your fantasy of what it is to be a writer. Do you write? Do you take ideas or stories and put them into words so that other people can read them and enjoy them, or be moved by them, or be inspired by them? That's what makes you a writer. Now, if you're not doing it, if you keep saying you want to be a writer and you're not writing, maybe put down the idea that you want to be a writer and see if you want to write. See what it is to sit down and just write something each day. It doesn't have to go anywhere. So I'll tell you a bit of my history, my story as a writer, as someone who's now considered fairly prolific. I used to love writing little plays and comedy song lyrics when I was a kid. So I think I wrote my first little playlet in the second grade, no, fourth grade. And it was about this hunter convincing a lion not to eat some other animal, because mares eat oats and does eat oats and little lambs eat ivy and a kid will eat ivy too, wouldn't you? It all made sense at the time. It was a huge hit across the fourth grade. And I sort of, you know, played around. And then I went to university and I used to write these philosophical essays. I wrote about Freud's civilization and its discontents from the perspective of a dialogue between a man and a human-sized cockroach in an elevator, where the cockroach was trying to persuade the man that for the sake of civilization, it was necessary that the man kill him. And I had a lot of fun writing these papers. But I never thought of writing as a thing. It was just, I enjoyed writing. I never thought of it as a possible career. And then I kind of didn't write anything for a number of years. And I got on with my life, and I was training as an actor, and I was working as a coach. And at the time I was teaching NLP. And so I was, you know, I was keeping busy. And then in 1994, I had the chance to write a series of sketches for a BBC radio comedy show called 30 Something Else. And I would just write these two sketches a week for 6 weeks. And I loved it. I loved everything about it. I loved staring at the blank page and not having any idea what I was going to write. I loved bouncing ideas and coming up with ideas. I loved fleshing the ideas out. I loved reading it after I'd written it. And I said to my wife, I figured out this is what I want to do. I want to be a writer. And she was like, wow, cool, great. How are you going to do it? And I was like, I don't know. I'll do a course. And so this was back before there was a lot of online courses, but I managed to track down a correspondence course. I think they still have mail these days, but they would mail you a lesson, each week in the physical mail, and you would go through and you were supposed to write the lesson. And I thought, oh, this would be a good way to get into it and to learn the business. And I did not write another word for six or 7 years. I just completely blanked, because I got caught up in the idea of being a writer instead of writing. And then in 1999, and I'm going to tell you the story because I trust that it will, A, hopefully be mildly interesting, but B, because you might see yourself at various stages of this. You might see if you want to be a writer, but you're not writing. And as we go through the show, we'll talk about, well, I am writing, but what do I do with it? And of course, you can call in about that again. 866-254-1579. Toll free in the U.S. and Canada. Outside the U.S. and Canada, 001-760-918-4300. I was talking to a mentor, and the conversation began with the phrase, the problem with you. And, you know, any conversation that begins with the words, the problem with you, I was hooked. And he said, the problem with you is you come up with all these ideas when you're teaching and in your coaching sessions. But if somebody doesn't happen to be in the room when you say them, you have such a low boredom threshold that you never repeat it. And then it's just gone. And that's a shame. Now, something about that struck me. And I thought, I wonder what it would be like to write down some of my ideas. And I thought, well, okay, I'll write down one idea a day for a year. Now, I don't know why that's what came to me, but as it happened, I was moving to the States from London, and I thought, oh, you know what? There's a small group of people I know here, and I'll send them one thing a day. And I asked them for permission. I think there were 12 people. And I started what I called the daily coaching tip. And each day I would sit down Sunday to Thursday. I worked out was going to be my schedule, so they'd come out Monday to Friday, and just write something, some idea that I had that I thought might be interesting to people. And I came up with four words, my four watchwords, where that I wanted them to be simple, practical, empowering, and fun. And that was my sort of checklist for what I wrote. And I just started. And I've gone back and I've read some of those early ones, and some of them are pretty good and some of them aren't. You know, some of them I'm proud of, and some of them I'm embarrassed by. But that was the first year where I could honestly say, oh, I'm a writer. Now, nobody was paying me. There were only 12 people reading them at first, though that 12 quickly turned into a couple hundred, quickly turned into a couple thousand, and eventually turned into my career. But I was writing. I was in the game. And this is true of everything, not just writing. But when you're in the game, it's completely different game than when you're watching it from the sidelines, when you're watching it from the stands, when you're thinking about what it might be like. And in some ways, and this is true for most people, in some ways, when you're in the game, it's a lot easier than watching from the sidelines. Because everything looks so confusing and complicated from the sidelines. And when you're actually in it, it's a lot more intuitive than it looks. Some things are a lot harder when you're in the game. It looks like, oh, great, yeah, you're a writer. You crank out all these cool things. That's awesome. I interviewed for one of the world summits. I don't think it was this most recent one. But for one of the world summits, I interviewed Mike Dooley. And I met Mike many, many years ago, and I know him a bit. And you know, I love him. I love his work. And I love his daily notes from the universe, thoughts from the universe, I think he calls them. No, notes from the, I don't know. You probably know more than I do. But there are these little paragraphs that come out every day, and they have your name in them, and they go, hey, Michael, the universe wants you to know that today is your day, and you're going to have an amazing one, and I've got you. So you can pretty much not worry about anything today, and I'm going to take care of it. Love the universe. And they're all simple. I don't know that they're simple, practical, empowering, fun, but they're definitely simple, empowering, and fun. And I thought, how cool is that? Because he also has books and does all that. But like, I wanted to know how he did it. And I sort of thought, oh, I bet he knocks off like 30 of these at a time, and then, you know, leaves it and then comes back and does another 30 and leaves it and comes back. And he talked me through his process. And this is what I mean about the difference from watching it from the sidelines, where you just see the output and go, oh, that looks cool, to what it's like in the game. Well, it takes him a couple hours to write each one. He meditates on it. He writes and rewrites and edits. He leaves it. He comes back to it. He has a whole set of rituals around it. Now, somebody else might write something equally great in 30 seconds. So it's not that you have to take a lot of time. You have to meditate first. You have to be in the right state of mind. You have to, basically anything that you think you have to do, you probably don't. The only thing you have to do is there have to be words on a page by the time you're done if you want to be a writer. But if you want to be a writer, you're going to have to write. And if that seems problematic to you, then maybe you don't want to be a writer. So how do you get started writing? Well, it's a little bit like saying, how do you get started walking, right? I really want to walk to the kitchen from the room that I'm in right now. well, how do I do it? How do I walk to the room? Well, if somebody asked you that, you would look at them a little bit like, are you serious? Is this a real question? And then you'd go, I don't know. Do you know where the kitchen is? And they would go, yeah. And you'd go, well, head that away. Kind of knowing that they'll figure it out. Well, when somebody says to me they want to write, but they don't know where to start, it's kind of the same. I hear it the same way that you probably would hear somebody asking you how to get to the kitchen or how to get to the bathroom. You go, well, do you know where it is? So do you have some idea of what you might like to write about? Oh, I don't know. Okay, then why do you want to write? Well, okay, no, I would. I'd like to share my story because I think my story is worth telling. Well, okay, great. So start telling your story. Like, if it seems more complicated than that, it's because you're the one complicating it. Literally, if you can move your fingers, you can write. If you can move your mouth, you can write. So the idea that it's easy or difficult or anything else comes from the way that we think about it. So I want to give you kind of a new way of thinking about writing in the course of our time together today. One that hopefully is friendlier and makes it apparent how simple, if not easy, writing is, how straightforward it is. Jim Carrey, the comedian, said that as a young man, he struggled to talk to girls. And then one day it occurred to him that if he sat down with a girl and opened his mouth, at some point words would probably come out. And after that, that became the basis of not only how he talked to girls, but his entire comedy career. Well, it's the same with writing. If you start typing or you start writing, words will come out. There's a wonderful book by Julia Cameron called The Artist's Way. And it's a book that, to my mind, in fairness, I think actually makes it slightly seem harder and like a bigger deal to be an artist and to write. But I know for a lot of people, it makes it simpler because it provides a sort of a structure that they can use to write with. And one of the practices that she offers people in her book is morning pages. And the way morning pages work are you sit down and she suggests you do it longhand with a pen and paper and you write until you've covered 3 pages of your notebook or journal. And generally speaking, for most people, that takes about 30 to 40 minutes. And it's stream of consciousness. In other words, you can write anything you want. Nobody's ever going to read it. She even recommends you don't go back and read it, at least not for a long time. You're literally just getting noise out of your head and onto paper. And what happens is, A, because the inside of your head is less noisy, if you have an idea, it's a lot easier to see it and hear it and put it into words. But B, it kind of gets you in the habit of just writing, of just moving your hand and watching the page darken. One of my favorite stories, and I have heard that this is about Balzac, and I've heard that it's about Victor Hugo, which might mean it's not about anybody, but was that, let's say it was Balzac, that he had so much trouble getting himself to write that he would instruct his servants to lock him in the bathroom, and they would slide without his clothes, and they at the beginning of each day, and they would slide 3 pieces of parchment, and I in my imagination it was a feather quill and an inkwell. I actually don't know what he wrote with, and under the door, and the servants were under the instruction not to let him out until he had passed 3 dark pages back at them. And you know, I don't even know if they were literate, so it wasn't that they had to read them, but when he had darkened 3 pages with writing and passed them back under the door, then they would let him out to begin his day. Well, a lot of what writing is darkening the page, is just getting into the habit of putting words on paper and not worrying about, well, are they the right words? Are they quality words? Would anyone buy these words? Is this going to make me famous? Is this going to make me rich? all of these things are the things that make it seem hard, is we put a lot on what is essentially one of the simplest. It's not quite as simple as walking, but it's not much harder. Your job is to darken the page. Then, when you can darken pages, when you can fill your screen with writing, when you can fill a pad with writing, when you can type up page after page after page, then you can start to look at, is it any good? And chances are that some of it will be and some of it won't be. And that's going to be true for your entire career, if you have a career as a writer. Some of what you write, you'll think is really good. Some of what you write, you won't. Some of what you write, other people will think is really good. Some of what you write, they won't. That never really changes. But how seriously you take it does. And on the whole, not saying this is a universal, but on the whole, I would say the number one reason that people don't write who say they want to write is because they think it has to be good. Now, ultimately, if you're going to share it with the world and they're going to care, it's going to have to be good. But you know how you get good? By doing it. Some of you know the story. It's one of my, I put it in my first book, and it's a story that I tell often, but it's to me, it perfectly sums this up. So when my son was 6 years old, I wanted him to play baseball. And so, we put him on a team, and after about 2 weeks, he came back to his mom and I and said, I want to quit. You know, of course, no son of mine's going to be a quitter. So I'm like, why do you want to quit? And he said, because I suck at baseball. And my wife kind of rolled her eyes like, over to you, coach. And for me, I heard him. And I looked at him and I said, you know what, Butt Bear? That's what I call him. You do suck at baseball. Because he did. He was six. Why wouldn't he suck at baseball? I said, the question is, do you want to get good? And his eyes lit up, because clearly it had not occurred to him that baseball was not genetic. That like anything, if you do more of it, you'll get better at it. And he was like, yeah. And I said, well, here's what we're going to do. I'm going to throw you 50 balls every day. You're going to throw 50 back to me. And then we're going to swing 50 times at the ball and with the bat. And we're going to do that every day. And if in a month you still want to quit, you can quit. And he was like, cool. And of course, within a couple of weeks, he was the best kid on the team because they were six. Now, you might say, well, I'm not six. No, but I bet if you're really struggling writing, you probably have about as much experience with writing as Oliver did of playing baseball. And so it's really helpful to know that it doesn't have to be good. You just have to darken the page. We'll talk about good later. Let's go to the phones, actually. Let's go to Elizabeth in LA. Elizabeth, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I'm in Los Angeles, and I am doing a pilot for television, and I'm really inspired, and I'm dealing with a lot of stress and interference for me getting that creativity out so I can get this done to submit. It's a really important series for television that I really feel is going to resonate and help a lot of people's heart grow. So I'm wondering if you knew, I know I have guides and angels around me protecting me, but how can I wrangle them all up so I can really focus and get this out? Because I'm in the middle of it right now. That's my question.
Okay. Well, so the first thing that I can pretty much tell, you know, based on knowing you for almost a minute now, is is that the reason that you're finding it stressful is very intimately tied in with you thinking that it's really important.
Okay.
Now, I I'm going to trust here that you can hear between the lines if I say this slightly wrong, because I might. It may turn out that it makes a big difference, but most of us, when we think of important, we think of it like a responsibility that's on our shoulders. We think, man, okay, I need to really concentrate here. I need to really try. I need to really make sure that this is worthy of this importance. And in doing that, all of that energy shows up in our body as stress. All of that thought actually is the interference that then makes it seem kind of noisy and like we need to do something in order to get clear. Does that make sense?
Yes.
So I can't tell you what kind of Jedi mind trick to do with yourself to kind of see that, maybe this would go better if I didn't make such a big deal out of it. But whatever Jedi mind trick you come up with is going to be worth it. Because if
it's
something...
Well, physically,
some point,
I haven't.
Yeah. Okay, good.
I haven't done that. But, like, today, I just felt like an urgency and an importance, like, I have to get this out. I have to keep focusing on it, and I'm not. I'm distracted by the really intense stresses in my life. So,
okay, so you're saying that the stress for you is not to do with your writing. There's other things that you're finding stressful, and it's interfering
it's
with your writing.
Yeah, it's outside, and then I'm thinking, okay, I didn't focus on my writing today. And then it piles up. Another day goes by.
So do you think that urgency means that you should go faster?
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, no, urgency means slow down. Urgency is insecurity.
Urgency,
writing that. Urgency.
So I can remember it.
I once had the psychologist Alfie Cohn on the show. And he writes a lot. He wrote a book called Punished by Rewards and another book called Unconditional Parenting. And we were talking about his book, Unconditional Parenting, one day. And somebody said, I think it was a caller who called in and said, well, you know, I understand this idea of really taking your time and not using punishment and reward with your children and blah, blah, blah. But what do you do if you're in a hurry and you just have to get them to school? And Alfie stopped for a minute and he thought about it and he said, well, don't be in a hurry. Now, he was kind of kidding, but he was also not. When we have that sense...
That really resonates.
Yeah, okay. Say, so
because
what is it about
that?
Because
I did that as
resonates?
A nanny.
Yeah, okay. Say a bit more about that. How does that resonate?
And when
for
I
you?
Am
in
an emergency situation, I always slow down so mm-hmm. I can really assess everything and do everything as it needs to get done. So that just makes total sense.
Yeah. So that then is the first thing to see, is the urgency is actually a symptom, not a cure. Now, the second thing that I suspect will be helpful is to recognize where stress comes from. Because it looks like stress, like I often say, the dominant theory of stress is germ theory. That we kind of think certain situations have a lot of stress germs, so we're very likely to catch stress when we're in them. And other situations don't have many stress germs, so we're less. So like most people think, well, yeah, there aren't very many stress germs in the woods. If you know, unless you're late at night in your Little Red Riding Hood, you know that there aren't many stress germs there, so you're unlikely to be stressed if you're walking in the woods. But there's a lot of stress in the office, and if I walk into the office, I'm likely to catch stress. But stress is 100% made of thought. So I'm sure you've been in situations that other people would have called stressful, where you didn't experience them as stressful at all. And I'm sure you've been in situations that other people would think, what's the big deal? And you were freaking out. Is that true?
Exactly.
Yeah. That's how you know it's never the situation. We feel thought. And if it's stressful thought, which often feels like urgency, and importance, then we're going to feel stressed. But what that means is when those thoughts aren't in the foreground running the show, when those thoughts don't look real and important and like you have to pay attention to them, you're actually, the stress is done. You might still have some after effects of adrenaline in the body, but the stress can literally disappear in a thought, in a heartbeat.
I notice that when I am very anxiety, I don't take any medication, but I calm myself down because I ask God to hover over me and take it away. I just go, it's not mine, just take it away. And I breathe really deeply, and then I go through a whole scenario of just real love and self-care. So this really resonates with me. Thank you.
You're welcome. And I'll give you one last piece, if it's okay. One more thing that might
Please.
Be helpful. Let your writing be a refuge instead of something else
it.
On your to-do list.
I love this so much because that's exactly right.
And then
that's how I want my stories to sure. be presented, as a refuge. That's
and then that's the thing.
Word.
Perfect. Perfect. And then, you know, as for, you know, look, if you've got guides and angels, I'm sure you already know how to work with them. But it just
I'm steering it very wobbly, but I'm getting there.
Yeah. And so when you're not freaking yourself out, you'll figure that bit out yourself. I always say
thank
that
the you, Michael.
It's a pleasure. Thank you, Elizabeth. I always say that the problem with advice is that when you really need it, you usually can't hear it. And by the time you're settled down enough to hear it, you usually don't need it. So I'm going to guess that, you know, there are a bunch of you who recognize that sense of urgency, or that sense of I've got to do this, or that sense of, but I have an important story to tell. The rule of thumb is if you're writing, it doesn't really matter. And if you're not writing, it doesn't really matter. The story you're telling yourself is either helping you write or getting in the way of writing. But it's either way, you know, this sounds a weird thing to say, particularly on Hay House Radio. But honestly, if you want to write, who cares how you feel? Like, probably there are going to be times where you feel great and times where you feel horrible, times where you feel inspired and times where you feel like, ugh, last thing I want to do. But writing in some ways can be a very blue collar job. You know, in this program that I'm working on, that I'm editing with Steve, I just watched a bit where he talked about, you know, thinking of writing like being a truck driver. That if, you know, if your boss at the trucking company calls and goes, hey, where's our shipment of vegetables? And you go, oh, man, I just couldn't today. I had trucker's block. Right? You're just going to be out of a job. Or you said, oh, I'm feeling really lousy today. Or, oh, I'm feeling really insecure today. Or, oh, my guides told me that I need to not show up today. Well, you're going to be out of a job real quick. You can treat writing like that. And it's a job. You show up, you write. And some days you love it, and some days you don't. And when people ask me if I love writing, my honest answer is sometimes, but I almost always love reading what I wrote. There's something magical that happens when you write, something alchemical, where you go into a space where you literally do not know what's going to happen next, what's going to come out of you, what's going to come through you, and then somehow, alchemically, magically, this nothingness, this blank space, something comes through and you get to be the vehicle for it. And then you get to see what came through you. And it will always retain the flavor of you. Like, for me, the difference between writing and channeling is that. Channeling, as best I can tell, it doesn't always take on the flavor of the channel. Whereas writing is like channeling, but you allow it to be flavored by you. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to our friend Dan in Philadelphia. Hey, Dan, how you doing today?
I'm doing really well, Michael. How are you?
I am well. What would be helpful?
Well, so far what you've been talking about has been very helpful to the point of my question being answered. I was originally going to ask about organizing ideas for my next book. I was telling this call screener, each year for the past decade almost, I've self-published just a pocket-sized book of sonnets or abstract rhyme or short stories and given them as Christmas gifts.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a lot of fun, and I don't know if people like it or not. I mean, my brother actually gave it back to me at one point and said I don't read books, but that's family. So, but anyway, I just want to thank you, and you also gave me ideas for transcribing my radio shows that I've done, the topics, and maybe putting a book together. But I just didn't know, from what I've shared, do you have any extra tidbits? As to maybe moving forward for this year's gift?
Well, I have a couple questions which might lead to tidbits. And the first is, like, if it's a Christmas thing, why is it meaningful that you don't have an idea yet?
I don't know, because I'm the type of person that wants to get it done right away so I don't have to worry about it. So I usually start it in the middle of the year.
Okay, I've got a great cure for that. Just
okay.
don't worry about it, and then you don't have to worry about it.
Okay. I give people USB drives, I was thinking, instead. But.
No, that sounds flip, and it is a little bit flip, but there's actually a point behind it.
Okay.
It sounds like you've made up now that this is a job. This is okay. I've got to do this, and I'm going to worry about it until it's done. Now, that is a common motivational strategy.
Yeah.
It's just a motivational strategy that kills creativity.
Yeah, I want it to be fun. I want it to be a fun process. Yeah.
So what would be, forgetting the gift part, so there's painter, Michelle Cassou, writes in her book Point Zero about the three dragons of creativity. In other words, what are the three things that get in the way of our creative expression? And one of the three dragons is the dragon of product. The idea that there has to be something there at the end. And when we get over-focused on what needs to be there at the end, we lose sight of the fact that all we ever need to do is darken the page. So what would be fun for you to write about? Whether or not it becomes a Christmas gift, like what would be kind of a fun thing to explore in writing?
A short story, almost like children's style with illustrations.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So how about that? And not worrying about the illustrations, not worrying about how am I going to get it illustrated? Am I going to get this done in time? Is it going to be any good? But just like, how about having fun writing a children's story?
Yeah, that's good, because I do take things too seriously at times, and I just want to relax and enjoy the process.
And the funny thing is, when you relax and enjoy the process, not only does the process become more enjoyable, it tends to get done.
Yeah, yeah. So
thank you, Dan.
I just wanted to thank you, and I appreciate it. Yeah, I'll let you go for other callers. I wish you all the best.
Okay, thanks, Dan. And I hope you're picking up on a theme here, right? However I say it, essentially what I'm saying is, if you want to write, write. End of story. Everything else will come as you write. You don't need to know how it's going to turn out when you start. Now, some people like to, and some people are able to. But the metric is, am I writing? If you're writing, whatever you're doing is fine. Could you do it more efficiently? Probably. Could you do it with less stress? I'm sure you could. But you're writing. If you're writing, you're writing. And if you're not, you're not. How's that for depth? Let's go to Texas. Let's talk to Cynthia. Cynthia, welcome to the show. What are we going to talk about today?
Hi there. Hey, thank you. Well, I wanted to talk about writing.
That's handy.
Yeah. And I was saying that I have the title and I've been a writer all my life. I've never written a book, and the only two, you know, people that ever said I wrote well was my grandmother and, you know, maybe one or two college professors, but I can procrastinate, and I've had the name of this book, and I know this book that I want to write.
Mm-hmm.
And I've even, you know, gone back to school so I can write scholarly writing and avoid writing this wonderful book. And I wonder how much time would you need to put in if you were just going to sit down and write every day? Would you advise that?
Well, okay. So I'll answer the question, and then if it's okay, I want to come at this a few other ways because I think there's some helpful stuff in there for you, but also for most people listening. Would that be okay?
Yes, thank you.
So I once did the math on how much writing I would produce if I wrote for half an hour a day, 5 days a week.
Mm-hmm.
And I realized that on average in half an hour, I write about 750 to 1,000 words.
Wow.
Which is, you know, is about a page and a half. You know, it's not an epic amount, but it's that. And then I went, okay, so if an average book is 250 pages and I'm doing essentially a page and a half a day, then that's, and here's where my math is going to really fail me. That's like, you know, it turns out that you could write two books a year that way.
Wow.
Now, most people don't need to work at that pace.
Mm-hmm.
So it really takes a lot less than we think. Now, of course, it's not quite straight math because not every one of those words that you write will make the final edition. Mm-hmm. You know, and when you get to the point where you go back and edit, that will take time. But let's even say half an hour a day, 5 days a week for 6 months, and then that leaves you 6 months to edit it.
Wow.
You're still going to do a book a year.
Yeah. And when you say just write, then that's what you do, huh? Mm-hmm. I'm paralyzed when I
know.
About, you know, this doesn't make sense. This is not, nobody's going to want to read this.
Right, but do you see how none of that has anything to do with writing?
Yes.
That's so. Here's this may or may not be relevant for you, but I always loved there's a strategy called the Disney Creativity Strategy, and I used to coach a lot of screenwriters here in Hollywood, and I happened to share this with two of them. And they were at different points in their career, and one of them was very successful already and had sold his $1 billion screenplay, and the other one was getting like $50,000 a week for script doctoring, and the other one had just sold their first screenplay for $10,000. So they were at very different stages of writing. And I taught them both the strategy I'm about to share with you. And basically the strategy was taken from reports of how Walt Disney did creativity. So they used to say there were three Disneys, there were three Walt Disneys, and you never knew which one was going to come into a meeting. And one of them was a dreamer, and he would come into a meeting and he would just be like, imagine, I wonder what if we took like all these orange groves or that swamp and we turned it into like this huge amusement park where all of our characters would come to life and greet the children and there'd be rides and, you know, and he'd just have these fantastical ideas and everyone would be really inspired. And the next meeting, they'd all come in with their fantastical ideas and, you know, Walt number two would come in and he was the realist and he would go, okay, well, how much is it going to cost? How long is it going to take? What do we need to do? What needs to be done by when? And he'd get very almost like an accountant with it.
Yeah.
And then everyone would go into that mode and they'd come back with all their facts and figures. And then sometimes this third Walt, the spoiler or the critic, would come in and he would just rip everyone's ideas to shreds. and talk about, kind of like you just did with yourself, like, you know, oh, this is a stupid idea. Nobody's going to buy this. Nobody's going to come. And they'd have to satisfy that Walt. Well, they turned this into a strategy where they realized actually all three of those are really helpful unless they happen at the same time.
Oh.
So it's really helpful to kind of daydream about possibilities. It's really helpful to just write and darken the page. And it's really helpful to go back and critique and make it better. But it's totally unhelpful to do any of them while you're trying to do the other one. So,
yeah.
So here's how my two writers that I was working with did it. So the one who was very successful and had a big home, he designated three different rooms as his writing rooms. And so he would use one room to just daydream and think about possibilities and play with ideas. He had another room that was just for writing. Like all he did in there was darken the page. And then he had another room where he'd have stuff that he'd written printed off and he'd go through with his red pen and hack it to bits. And he kept the rooms clean. Now, the younger writer who didn't have the, who lived in a one-bedroom apartment, he bought three hats. And so he literally at first, now he didn't, I don't think he still does this, but he would just change hats. He would literally put on a dreamer hat, a writer hat, and a critic hat.
I could do that.
And it's just, it's all just fun. But what it does is it helps you see, okay, these are different stages of the creative process and they can't overlap.
Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Yeah. That's very helpful. Thank you.
Good.
I appreciate that. Have a great rest of your day.
Thank you, Cynthia. Enjoy. You know, the larger point, and I mean, it is a fun strategy, and it's not one I formally do anymore, but what it did was it made me very aware of when I was stopping myself by criticizing. And instead of battling the inner critic, they have a real job to do. You really want to be able to go back and evaluate your work and make it better, just not while you're writing it. And it's really helpful to take time to daydream and try out ideas and play with stuff without the responsibility of it having to become a product. But at some point, you probably want it to become a product. So none of these things are problematic. It's just when we do them in the wrong order, when we criticize before we've written, when we talk ourselves out of it before we start. And by the way, I don't know about you, but I have that voice going on half the time I'm doing anything. So I was doing a being interviewed for a podcast recently, and the voice in my head was having a field day. It was, oh, you know, you know, you're not feeling up for this today. You're tired. You're sick. This isn't really your topic. You should cancel. Now, this is going on as I am being interviewed. Now, if I hadn't learned very early on that the voice inside your head is not the voice of God, it just sounds like it thinks it is, that would have stopped me. That would stop me from even accepting an interview request because, oh God, I know what that's going to be like. That's going to be hell. But at some point I learned that just because there's a thought in your head doesn't mean it's your thought. It doesn't mean you have to listen to it. It doesn't mean you have to do what it says. That's kind of called schizophrenia. It just means we have thoughts in our head. And when you start to see that you are not your thoughts, you are the space that the thoughts come into and go out of, then you don't even have to control your thinking. You don't even need better thinking. You can let the thoughts come and go. Now, if they're genuinely useful to you, they'll come back. But they'll come back at a time where it's helpful. So what was helpful for me about that voice was after the show, I thought about, I wonder how I could talk more meaningfully about this. I wonder how I could have expressed that in a more useful way. And that was useful. It just wasn't useful while I was being interviewed. So if you have a lot of self-critical thoughts, you don't need to affirm them away. You need to A, check, are they self-critical? oh, you suck, you're terrible, why would anyone ever want to listen to you? Which is utterly irrelevant at all times. Because writing is not about you. It's about the words on the page. But if it is, oh man, that sentence sucks. Oh wow, I don't think that expresses what I mean at all. Well, it's really helpful to be able to go back after you've darkened the page and go back through it and clean it up and clean it up and clean it up. So I sometimes talk about myself as a writer that I almost don't think of myself as a writer so much as I do as a rewriter. My strategy, and this is how I think about it, and some people have told me this is gross, but I vomit words, right? I'll vomit them onto the microphone, I'll vomit them onto my keyboard, and then I don't even worry about it. I just want to get words out. And then I'll go back over them later, and I'll see, oh, I see what I was trying to say. Oh, actually, there's some really nice chunks in here, and I'll pick out the chunks, and then I'll add more words to connect them up and to create a flow. The key is whatever occurs to you to do that gets words out of your head and onto the page is what it takes to be a writer. Everything else is noise. Now, I did promise that I would talk about what if that's not your problem. What if you write lots, you just want to make it better. You want to assemble it. Well, once you've got words, then being able to go back through it and cast a critical eye, but again, not a self-critical eye, but to read it as a reader, to read it as if it had been written by someone else, can be very helpful. And how do you do that? Well, every writer I know has a pocket full of ways of doing this. One of the things that I do is I'll go back and I'll reread, or I'll have somebody else read and we'll talk about it, and I'll make notes and I'll look at it. But at a certain point, I have to read it out loud, because there's something for me when I hear it out loud, I hear it more impersonally than when I read it on the page. So again, this is for me. If I'm just on my screen, I can't really separate it out from myself. If I print it off, now I'm reading it like somebody else wrote it. And then if I read it out loud, I seem to be able to really hear it clean. And the key is, as best you can, to be able to go back through it as if somebody else had written it, without getting your self-worth involved, your psychology involved, your ego involved. Just read it. And what you'll find is that you start to become discerning. In fact, you probably already are. In fact, there's a wonderful Ira Glass poem that I'm sure I've read out on the show before, because it really speaks to the number one reason that I think people stop themselves as writers, and it's actually a good thing. And it's because we have great taste. And what he said was, nobody tells this to people who are beginners. I wish someone told me. All of us who do creative work, we get into it because we have good taste. But there is this gap. For the first couple of years you make stuff, it's just not that good. It's trying to be good. It has potential, but it's not. But your taste, the thing that got you into the game, is still killer. And your taste is why your work disappoints you. A lot of people never get past this phase. They quit. Most people I know who do interesting creative work went through years of this. We know our work doesn't have this special thing we want it to have. We all go through this. And if you're just starting out or you're still in this phase, you gotta know it's normal. And the most important thing you can do is do a lot of work. Put yourself on a deadline so that every week you'll finish one story. It's only by going through a volume of work that you will close that gap, and your work will be as good as your ambitions. Now, that's a pretty cool thing to know. I do want to say, I meant to say this earlier, if you're interested in exploring this with me more, we've got a new program called Emerging Voices. So you can check it out online, michaelneal.org/emerging voices. Hope you've enjoyed the show. Look forward to talking to you again soon. Until next time, have fun, learn heaps. I'll talk with you then. Bye-bye for now.